From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 19th day of October, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes of TotalFarmMarketing.com. Drew Lerner will be here to discuss the agricultural weather forecast from World Weather Incorporated. And we'll take a look at the cash grain situation, including the basis at the Gulf and here in the central part of the United States, with Greg Johnson of TGM Total Grain Marketing on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Jackie Vakes at TotalFarmMarketing.com now joins us to discuss the trade in Chicago. Jackie, thank you for being with us. We probably have a lot of ground to cover. Harvest, of course, underway. What do the support and resistance levels look like today?
Well, for December corn, 669, 766, March, 621, 689, and May, 683 and 702. Beans unchanged pretty much from last week, 1309, 1415. For November, January 1319, 1422, and March 1381, 1429. Gold for December, 1605, 1696. Dow Jones improved a little bit, 30,253, 31,532. Dollar went down a bit, 109.25 to 113.12. Managed money, you know, we talk about this every week. Always interesting how it moves around. They're short wheat, 35,000 this week compared to 20 last week. Long corn, 255,000 compared to 206 last week. So they added quite a lot there. Beans, 63,000 long compared to 82 last week. Meal, 67 compared to 81. And soy oil, 69 compared to 60. And so you can see that they've reduced their bean positions on beans and meal and increased oil. And that, I believe, is a result of the crush report that we had. Index traders hedging inflation, they added positions on all three. Wheat, they added 4,065. Corn, 1,559. Beans, 13,823 long positions this last week. On export inspections, wheat exports ended up 1% compared to down 4% last week. Corn 12% behind compared to 12% last week, and beans 13% behind compared to 15% last week.
What'd you make of managed money for the week?
Managed money, what did I think of it? Well, you know, they're certainly betting big on corn, you know, at 255,000 versus 206. You know, so their bets at the moment are with corn and with soy oil. And wheat, of course, you know, they've increased their short position in the wheat. And I think that's coming primarily because, you know, we have such varying information coming out of the Ukraine and Russia. And, you know, you've got so many conflicting supposed facts coming out. You know, they're saying that they're going to be close to what they were last year, but their crop is lower than last year. And so it's just managed money is fluid. They're constantly moving. But at the moment, their bets are on corn and on soy oil.
It's been a relatively quiet trade week, but there's always market action. Are there other things we should discuss?
Oh, there's no question. You know, the dollar is really what's dogging the commodity market outlook for exports. And you know, the fact that the South American weather right now is, it's not too bad. It's better than what they expected it to be. And so it's always difficult for us to believe that we're going to be able to increase exports in the face of the dollar being the way it is. And, you know, as we look forward, if the Fed comes out and does do another rate increase, which it looks like it's likely, the dollar's probably going to climb again. So that's a big thing that people, you got to keep a good eye on what the dollar's doing. You know, bean oil, like I said earlier, was the leader this week, and that's just because we had a lower than expected crush number. And, you know, they're banking a lot on renewable fuels in the background, you know, and palm oil has been coming up with it. So that supports it. So I think in general, bean oil will be the support in the bean market for the near term. But one of the things I wanted to talk about, Todd, was, you know, so many people have put so much emphasis on Russia and Ukraine potential losses. When you look at the full global picture, the Russia and Ukraine represent about 20% of global stocks. Okay. And we do have really tight stocks right now. I mean, they're very close to those 2013 levels. And then that's concerning. There's no different, you know, there's just no arguing about that. But, you know, the old adage, short crops get shorter. I kind of believe that this is going to follow through for 2022 or for the 22 crop, primarily from what we're hearing on beans and you know, the drought's gotten worse. So the idea that production could drop further is, I think, is real. But all of our listeners have to think about this. Does that mean that prices will go higher? My concern is that, you know, any added crop loss or reduction due to a crop loss is going to be more than offset by a reduction in usage, especially in exports. You know, this again goes back to the dollars being as high as it is and the tensions with China. And so that's going to make an uphill battle. And so what I'm saying here is you got to be looking at 23 and saying, okay, this isn't the worst situation in the world. I looked at the crop insurance right now. Crop insurance average so far for December 23 corn is 615.5, and that's compared to 590 for last year, so that's better. And beans 1354.5 compared to 1433, so that's definitely worse, you know. And you just can't take a chance because we don't know what next year is going to bring. You know, this Mississippi River being at the lowest level since they started keeping record is just terrifying. And for not only because of exports, I mean, everybody seems to talk about exports. What about everything that comes back up that river? Fertilizer, fuel, all those other products that are out there that we need up here to be able to do things. And so, you know, this is a very fluid situation. When you look at the basis, you know, people who are dependent on the river basis right now, Todd, you all know that. It's terrible. Then you look at the interior basis, wherever there's huge demand. Let's say Nebraska, where there are a lot of feedlots. The feedlot guys have been hand-to-mouth. They haven't been buying like they should have been. Well, now all of a sudden they're buying like wild. And suddenly we've got basis that's 85 over for corn, which they've never, ever had in the 25 years I'm doing. In fact, today is my 25th anniversary. 25 years of doing this. You know, I'm in Nebraska, in the middle of harvest. It just doesn't make any sense, you know. And so I think that you have to err on the side of caution and be very careful. You get too wrapped up in the idea that the crop is getting smaller. We've got a lot of things on the opposite side that are working against us. We are not in a recession at this point in time, I don't believe, but I do believe that Europe is in a recession. I do believe that China is having a very tough time. And so if that's the case, we here have to really be on top of what's going on. You know, the idea that Russia declared martial law, that has an impact as to whether that export corridor is going to open up again. So, you know, that's been keeping our wheat market on edge. And I saw an interesting comment from Warren Buffett, and I'm going to make this comment regarding farmland values, okay? The power of low rates. Interest rates are like gravity in valuations. If interest rates are nothing, values can be almost infinite. If interest rates are extremely high, that's a high gravitational pull on values. He said this in 2016. And, you know, we've just had tremendous increases in farmland values in so, so many areas. And therefore, you know, we've got to be careful, too. I think that this is a time when, even though planting and harvesting are our main focus, we have to really focus on marketing and paying attention to what's going on in the world, not just here in our country.
Speaking of the rest of the world, what do you know about South America and crops there now?
You know, it's interesting with Brazil. So many times people say, you know, how many acres can they actually add? You know, I mean, what's their possibility as far as expanding their soybean and corn production? Well, I would say it's probably considered unlimited. They have pasture land, which accounts for about 18.9% of the Brazilian territory, or 400 million acres. And so a lot of that land can be converted to crop, and that's excluding the Amazon region. So, you know, that's the regions that they call the Cerrado, where they've got a lot of scrub brush and that type of thing. So it can be changed over very quickly. So when someone asks, I can't even imagine 400 million acres, much less think it could be turned over. But So their ability to expand is continuing, is going to continue into the future. When you look at their Safrina corn, looks like it's going to get planted late after the ideal window closes, primarily because the weather hasn't been good, and it's not because of dry weather, it's being delayed because of wet weather. And so this I thought you would find interesting. Fertilizer warehouses in Brazil, ports are full, so they're turning vessels away. So, you know, at the beginning of the war, everybody said, oh, they're going to have such a hard time in South America getting fertilizer, needing to plant the new guava. This has turned out to be absolutely unfounded. And as of right now, those ports instead are sending those full vessels to other countries because they're just turning them away. They don't have any room for anything. So they overbought, basically. And Argentina, soybean planting is being delayed because of dryness. Now, they're in the opposite end of what's going on up in Brazil. And they do have their corn 16% planted, but that is the lowest that we've seen in the last 6 years. Normally, they're about 23.6% planted at this point in time. So everything, even though they're getting some decent weather, it's not red and rosy completely down there.
Thank you for all the information today. I appreciate it. We'll talk with you again next week.
Thank you, Todd. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
You too. That is Jackie Vakes. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. Let's check in now with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. Thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day. A little crisp, though, I'm afraid, in some places.
Yeah, it's been a little crisp. It was a lot crisp in a lot of places. I think there was a season's ending freeze for much of the Corn Belt last night. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Oh, yes. Pretty impressive event, really, for the southern parts of the country. We had frost and freezes carrying down into all but the southern border. Well, yeah, all but the southern border of Mississippi and Alabama, both. They had 32 degrees or colder reported all but along the border with Florida and Louisiana. So up to the north, we had hard freezes in the middle and northern parts of the Delta, 27 degrees reported in quite a few spots. In the Tennessee Basin, seeing a lot of temperatures in the 20s. We saw frost in Georgia, mostly central and northern Georgia. And we saw frost occurring in the Carolinas. And we still have another night of this coming up for a lot of those areas with more frost and freezes likely tomorrow morning. It won't be as intense. But boy, this has been impressive. You know, we saw temperature extremes the night before last of the upper single digits in northwestern Iowa and the eastern Dakotas and western Minnesota. And for not having any snow on the ground and being this early in the season, that's a wow, you know, pretty impressive.
Very, very cold. There is, I think, a storm brewing in the northwestern part of the Corn Belt eventually, too. That appears to be the only thing that really is on the radar over the next week or so.
Yeah, it's a pretty good scenario playing out. I think there's a pretty good chance it's going to verify to some degree. This is an event that occurs Sunday into Monday or Tuesday of next week. So it is a long ways out and it could still change quite a bit. But it's a classic event where you get a little cool front coming in. Some cooler air sinks southward across Canada's prairies and into the northern U.S. plains. And then a low pressure system develops on that front. And because it's so warm in the plains and so cold to the north, you know, you get a powerful low pressure system evolving. And that sets the stage for a significant rain and snow event. This is looking a lot like the blizzard that occurred in October of 2020, 2 years ago, where we had 30 inches of snow fall, you know, in a day and a half's time. I don't know that this will be quite so intense. Certainly some of the model data out there today is suggesting that it will be, but because we're 5 days away from it, I think there's still a lot of potential for it to change a lot. But it might be an issue for certainly travel, but livestock stress, first storm of the season is always a real challenge for these animals. And certainly putting some moisture into the soil for use in the spring in the western part of the Dakotas maybe if you're in eastern Montana and southeastern Saskatchewan, would really be nice. So a lot of folks would be looking at that as a positive event. But yeah, it might be interesting to watch. It could be a full-blown blizzard, or it could be a wimpy little storm. So we'll have to kind of wait and see for another couple of days. I do think it will be a pretty aggressive system. I'm not sure I want to say 30 inches of snow, but we'll see a significant event, first one of the year for sure.
Well, we'll be able to recap it next week when we talk to you. Speaking of moisture needed, Argentina has been in a long-running drought. Any relief there?
Yes, there is. There is an atmospheric change underway right now for South America and Argentina in particular. And even though La Nina is still very close to its most recent peak, we are going to generate rain across most of the country. It's going to come in waves. The precipitation that occurs this week isn't going to be all that great. We got a little shower activity out there today. We'll see that linger a little bit tomorrow morning, and then another little wimpy system coming in Friday into Saturday. And then after that, two larger storm systems are possible for next week. And kind of like that Northern Plains event, we don't want to hold our breath and just kind of wait and see what happens. But they look like they ought to be two viable storms that would bring some significant relief to the dryness that's been prevailing in Argentina for quite some time. I have high confidence in the early week storm. The one that occurs late next week is just too far out, and I wouldn't be surprised to see it get wiped out down the road. But nevertheless, we'll get moisture in there to help this wheat crop, which is limping along. There's also a problem with some of the corn and sunseed. The early corn and sunseed that's going in the ground there needs a huge amount of moisture in order to germinate and emerge properly. And we're just a couple of weeks away from the start of soybean planting. So this could be a very important event for Argentina. Right now, it looks like maybe a half inch to an inch and a half of rain in general, with a few spots maybe getting a couple of inches.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Talk with you again next week.
You bet. Have a good day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Let's check the cash grain market now with Greg Johnson from TGM, Total Grain Marketing in Champaign County, Illinois. Hi, Greg. Thank you for being with us. We're still in the midst of issues related to both rail and the Mississippi River. I think the Mississippi River is the bigger of the two problems at the moment, though you do a lot of rail lines. Maybe you do see the rail as the bigger problem. However, we're in the middle of harvest. Exports for soybeans, particularly out of New Orleans, are important, and beans need to be able to move down the Illinois and the Mississippi rivers. How do you think the market will resolve some of these issues, or how is it as it's related to basis CIF or CIF values in New Orleans and then basis locally?
Yep, you're right. It is a very important issue. We've seen pretty good demand for soybean exports, and so the values down at the Gulf are reflecting that, some pretty strong bids. The problem is you've got to be able to get it there, and with the river as low as it is, barge traffic has been slowed down. You can only load half to three quarters of a barge type of thing. That increases the cost. So then people look for rail to take the place of barge. Well, there's only a limited amount of rail cars available, and the railroads aren't stupid. When they see increased demand, the price goes up. And so if you can get cars at all, it's more expensive. And so what we've seen is, even though the demand is pretty good for soybeans, the cost has gone up comparably. And so that reflects a weaker basis for soybeans here in the Midwest. And that's what we've seen. Our basis levels here in general have dropped about a nickel on soybeans since last week. I think that's pretty much attributable to the higher freight cost to get it from point A to point B. We haven't seen that yet in corn basis levels. They haven't slipped yet. But my theory on that is it's mainly because we haven't gotten into the corn harvest until this week. Last week was mainly a bean harvest week, and so the pressure was on the beans last week. If nothing changes river-wise, we may see the pressure start to spill over onto the corn basis, but we haven't seen that yet.
So futures work to balance supply and demand across the planet. That's one price. New Orleans is pricing to try to get grain or oil seeds, soybeans at this time. And so the CIF values, the basis there has been moving higher, I take it, trying to attract folks to move grain however they can. And then locally, you pick up some of the price tag as it's related to the basis. So you're paying more for transportation going down. Does that kind of sum it up correctly?
You hit it right on the head. That's exactly the dilemma. You would think that with higher prices, that's good for farmers, but when the transportation costs increase as much or even more, it translates into a weaker basis here in the central Midwest.
And so we're waiting for rainfall in that case to fill the river back up and make things more normal. In the meantime,
yeah.
Producers remain doggedly friendly to bullish the marketplace. Is that the right thing to do?
I think so on corn. Yield keeps coming down on corn. We're at 171 and a lot of the private 171 and a fraction. And then a lot of the private guys are in that 170 camp. And, you know, if that's the case, then assuming that we don't destroy our demand side of the equation, that's about a 1 billion bushel carryout, which is extremely tight. And so it just feels like farmers are of the opinion that the downside is limited. I don't know what I would go outright and say bullish, but at least the downside is limited. So I think they want to wait and see how some of the other issues play out. The Ukraine-Russia war, for example, is China ever going to lift their zero tolerance COVID policy and get back into opening up business and stimulating some demand for commodities? So I think there's some things out there that farmers are just waiting to see, and they don't feel like there's much downside potential in corn, so it's okay to hold on to corn. Beans, on the other hand, you could make an argument for downside potential on beans if South America plants as many acres as what they're talking about, and if they have good weather, and that's a big if because it's a La Nina year down there. But I think the fundamentals are probably a little bit more supportive on corn longer term than they are on beans, and so farmers, as a result, are unwilling to sell corn at this level. I think they're willing to wait it out and see what happens.
Is it another quiet day of trade in Chicago too?
It is. It really is. We're waiting for new news. I mean, we really don't have a lot to talk about. We talk about, the first week in November, the Fed meets again, and they'll probably raise interest rates again. You know, will it ever rain again enough to fill the Mississippi River back up? I mean, we're certain, you know, the Ukraine-Russia war continues. There's always a few headlines there, but the market is basically searching for news now that we're past the October supply and demand report, and possibly we won't have a big market mover until the November supply and demand report.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with TGM Total Grain Marketing right here in Champaign County, Illinois, and helped us wrap up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Right now online at willag.org, by the way, you can find a link to the Farm Assets Conference. That's coming up the 21st day of November, the Monday prior to Thanksgiving or the week of Thanksgiving. We'd love to have you at the iHotel along with the agricultural economist, the crop scientist, and industry specialist. You can see all the details online at willag.org. Just hit the link or go to farmassetsconference.com. It doesn't matter which one. And sign up for the FarmDoc Teams Farm Assets Conference right now. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Our theme song is written and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, reminding you that if you're on the byways of the great state of Illinois this week, be sure to be careful. The tractors and combines are out in force still, and they run really, really slow. The farmers will be watching out for you. You watch out for them.